It is Monday, September 10th, at the first Fall Duval Historical Society meeting, and I'm turning on a tape recorder of listening to Chief Glenn Merriman in process of talking about the history of Duval since 1984.
Of course, she let the first police chief go and hired a gentleman by the name of Jim Bursaw. I don't know how many of you remember Jim Bursaw? Great guy. He was there in 1987. He, like I, had no intent to spend a lot of time in Duval. In fact, he was only contracted to be out here for about 4 months. But fell in love with Duval and spent 9 years here total. Interesting thing also about Jim is that when they hired him, he was hired as a civilian director. And he and his position was the first of its kind approved by the Attorney General to act as a civilian director for police services. So a rather unique scenario for Duval at the time. And in order to fulfill that requirement, though, they had to appoint a law enforcement officer to be the chief investigator, in other words, somebody that will take charge of all case investigations, and that's where I came in. So Jim and I formed a partnership right away, and I think it was a result of that partnership and friendship that we had with each other that neither one of us felt any need or want to go anywhere, so we worked very well together for 9 years until I finally retired from the city of Duval. It was during that time also that Mayor Irv Carter came back into office and did another 4 or 5 year term, and that was through the early 90s. Let's see, what did we have for staffing back then? We had Jim Bursaw, we had one sergeant, myself, and we had two full-time officers by the early 90s. And three part-time officers. And I think, was that about the era you came in, or was it the later 90s? I know a lot of it was a reserve force.
As a reserve, 96. But as a, part-time clerk?
That too. Alana was our girl Friday. She kind of was all over the town. She was our clerk. She was a clerk down at Public Works for a while. She was a reserve for us and ran
reserve
a business
96,
too.
Yeah.
96. Then Glenn Coons came in and was mayor, did a couple terms. And he went out in 2001. By that time, we had a chief, a lieutenant, six full-time officers, and four reserves. And we were operating with a budget of $452,000 back then. So it tells you how things are incrementing up as times go by and things get more expensive. Then Becky Nixon came in, was mayor for about 3 years. And then Jeffrey Possinger stepped in after her. And now we've got, of course, Mayor Ibershaw. And we are currently at a chief, two lieutenants, two sergeants, 10 full-time officers, and one reserve with a budget of $1.5 million. So a lot of money, a lot more officers. The one thing I can tell you is that I'm very proud of is that we've got a great group of guys over the years. We have developed a level of expertise that is unmatched and unparalleled by any other agency in my opinion, in the state of Washington. Our guys do an absolutely fantastic job. There are so many things I could talk about. It literally would take hours, but really what I want to leave you with is a sense of accomplishment that we worked hard for. You've got some very, very outstanding officers, very dedicated officers. Mm-hmm. Our longevity here speaks to that as well. I don't typically lose very many officers. I've got officers who have been here almost as long as I have. I've got a few that have been here 10, 12 years. We do have a younger group of guys that have just come in the last couple, few years as we add more positions. We're hiring new people. So we're filling those ranks. And the neat thing is, of course, as they walk in, and not only can they get a sense of community and home feeling within the community itself, but they can get a sense of that within the police department itself, because people like myself and others have been around for so long that they know that they can come in and feel at home and get involved and feel like they matter. And for small cities and law enforcement, that's an extremely important thing for us. Just some other general things. I already shared the cars. Back in the early years, we didn't have any gas stations that were open past 10. I remember being out here at midnight, being out of gas, having to drive a wooden bill to fuel up because we didn't have a 24-hour gas station. I remember policies being in place that you can only drive 50 miles per shift to try and conserve on fuel. But by the time you drove a wooden bill back to fuel up, you didn't have any miles left in your car, but you better not go or the chief would be on you. When I started here, the population was 950. Of course, we've all is, what, 6,000 now, and then we have a contract city to provide services to Incarnation and about 2,000 people. So quite a bit more in population. Casework, that's how we judge our productivity. I remember in the early days, I was pretty much the only full-time guy around, and I would handle a couple calls a week and a couple case investigations here and there. Well, to give you an idea today, we handle about 2,500 calls a year, and we do close to 900 case investigations a year. So when we look back over the 22 years where we came from and where we are, we've come a long ways in not only the amount of work we do, but also the kind of involvement in the things we get involved in. A couple other things that's interesting is with our new facility, we now have a holding cell, actually three holding cells. We average 2 to 3 bookings a day. We have a breathalyzer now. We have a computerized live scan for fingerprinting. We were actually one of the first agencies in King County to computerize our police record systems. I remember for the first 3 or 4 years, we were getting supervisors and admin folks coming over from Linwood, Edmonds, and different places like that coming over looking at our computer system, our record system. They're so impressive, small agencies can do that. Whereas I think we've got probably one of the best systems offered in the state. We partnered with the city of Redmond for that. And the other thing we're proud of is the fact that we've done that pretty cheaply. We rely pretty heavily on grants. Most of the equipment that we get through grant programs. This saves, of course, a lot of the taxpayers' money. But that, I think it also helps the guys learn to appreciate what they have a little more as well. It's very, very important for us. A lot of things that have occurred over the years, and I actually invited Mr. Coons to come along with me. I don't know what happened to him, but he was going to help share some of these stories, but I've got so many of them that I could literally take hours, and if you ever want to invite me back just to tell stories, I'd be happy to do that. But over the years, we've had quite a few different events that what I call events worth remembering. I don't know how many of you were here or remember back before Duval Police was created, but there were a couple bank robberies that I heard a lot about over the years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I remember we were here in 1987 when we experienced our first bank robbery. And the funny story about that is Jim Bursa, my boss at the time, he was in front of the library looking down the hill at the bulldozer that was digging, doing a little groundwork there, as the bank was being robbed. Of course, he's got his back to the front door, so he doesn't know that. He's down there watching the work. Well, I get the 911 call that the thing's been robbed. And I'm down having lunch with John Light down at the public works plant, and he hears the call come out. He goes, "Do you need some help?" And I said, "Well, you're about the only thing I'm going to get for backup for the next half hour, so yeah, you could grab my radio if I fall down." So he followed me up to the bank robbery. Of course, we get up there, and I'm by the corner of the bank, and I see Jim over there across the street, and I'm yelling at him, "Jim, Jim!" And he turns around, and he goes, "Yeah," he's waving at me. I'm saying, "Come here, come here." And he goes, "Okay, in a minute." And I said, "No, come here." And I'm trying to flag him over, and he's walking right across toward the front door. And I said, "Over here." So he comes over the corner, he goes, "Oh, what's going on?" I said, "Well, the bank just got robbed." He goes, "Oh, you're kidding me, because we used to do a lot of practical jokes at each other back then. He thought I was kidding him. I said, "No, this is real." Meanwhile, the clerk comes out, she's all nervous and upset. This guy robbed the place. And anyway, I spooked him half to death. I'm afraid he's going to have a heart attack. I mean, he was all worried that, people were hurt. Anyway, so nobody got hurt. We got in there. And the short story is we actually had the guy in custody within 6 hours after the bank robbery. A lot of clues led us on the path pretty quickly. What's funny about that is, the FBI comes out for every bank robbery you have, and that's nationwide. And so the FBI was there, and they were taking the videotapes, and the county sheriff's department, they came out and offered their help. And so I had all these officers running all over the place, honestly getting in my way. So we're trying to track down these leads, and finally they all leave because they can't turn over any more stones. And anyway, we were following our own stones, and bottom line, we had a custody within 6 hours, and we did it on our own. So anyway, we earned a pretty good reputation right away that if you're going to rob banks to do well, you're probably not going to get very far. Well, we thought we had that all figured out for these guys. Well, sure enough, about 4 or 5 years later, another guy came back and tried it again. He didn't make it very far. He made it as far as that little house south of town that's got the, used to do the bed and breakfast on the south, on the... your place. He ran down there. He was hiding in the woods behind that house there.
We were probably watching TV.
Well, we found him. He ran through the... there was some sort of old little shed out by there. And he ran through there, and he threw his coat. And then from there, he ran across the street and was heading down towards the river. And we knew this because we called on a canine who tracked him all the way down the woods. And it was little Bob Akey that chased the guy down the rabbit trail through the blackberries and actually caught the guy. So he didn't make it very far either. So fortunately, over the last 22 years, we've only had two attempts to get caught both times. And I think the reputation is out there. This is the last place you're really going to come try and rob the bank.
Have you heard about the fire truck chasing the bank?
I did. In fact, I heard that story from Irv Harder's brother, who was involved in that. He told me about that one.
Tell us.
We just had first moved out here. There was a robbery downtown. Well, there was nobody in the stores then because everybody ran out of the stores to catch the robber. And he must have been scared to death because they chased him with everything they had. The fire truck and everybody got in their farm trucks and they were chasing this guy. I don't know if they ever got him, though, but they sure scared him.
He had a fire department chased him with a 57 Ford ambulance. And when they knocked the back window out of the car and started shooting at him, that's when they backed off. And they went up the hill, Novelty Hill, and then there used to be an old road that went south. And they ran that car as far as they could south, set it on fire, and kept going, and they never caught him.
Wild West days, but I'll tell you. That reminds me, I was in town maybe all of 2 weeks out on patrol by myself, and back then most of the activity was centered around the Duval Tavern. That didn't take a kind of long to learn that. So here I'm parked in my police car in the parking lot across the street, and I'm sitting in my windows now. This is this loud Ooga horn. What the heck is that? And the thing's just blaring out the side of my car window, you know. So I jump out of my car, turn here, where that Ooga horn's coming from. And here comes this old guy walking out across the street from the tavern, and he's walking towards me, and he goes, "Hey, kiddo, how are you? What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm trying to figure out where this horn's coming from." He goes, "Oh, that's my phone." It's your phone. And as he's walking closer to me, I happen to notice the guy had a pistol on the side, on his hip.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, what the heck is this guy coming out of the tavern wearing a pistol for, you know? And so I'm telling the guy, "Stop where you're at, you know, don't come any closer." You know, I don't know this guy. He's going to be in town a couple weeks. I'm thinking, geez, everybody walks around with guns, you know? And so anyway, the horn's blaring. So I'm yelling at this guy to stop where he's at, and he says, "Don't put your hand by that pistol. Oh, there's nothing wrong with this pistol." And he starts to reach for him. I said, "Don't touch that gun, and I'm not kidding you." So I finally just ran up to the guy and grabbed his arm and said, "Don't reach for that pistol." He goes, "Oh," he says, "I don't carry it loaded anyway." Well, I take the gun out. It's this really old 38, and I open it up, and literally cobwebs are in the... Johnny Anders. Oh, that's why you have the Ooga horns, where you go over the street and you'll drink a beer and let the horns fall. So anyway, you know, second week in Duval, I wasn't sure what I got into out here. Ooga horns and guys walking with pistols everywhere.
I was living in the house with the dairy son. That was something. That was another thing, though.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you want to get into that or not.
So, yeah,
how long did it take you to learn that if he had the wrecker out to do something, try to get somebody else to run the wrecker?
We were up Cherry Valley Road one bad year with all the ice in the road, and little Volvo goes over the edge and kind of not quite flips over, but turns on its side. It's quite well stocked. So he wanted Johnny's towing. Okay, we'll call Johnny's towing. So Johnny hooked up to that thing, and he's towing, and he's giving it everything he's got. Pretty soon the tow truck was over the edge. So now I got the car hooked to the tow truck down the edge. So we had to call another tow truck to tow Johnny out to tow the car out. So that was our time we called.
Is right below the Lake Margaret Fire Station, these two guys were out of the tavern, and they, you know, you come around the corner there below it, and it goes down to the creek down there, and they decided to stop and take a leak. Brand new Ford pickup. And while they were taking the leak, the pickup nosed over that bank. There was no guardrail there then. Okay, it's just off the road right there. So they got a phone, they got Johnny up there. Johnny hooks onto it to pull it up. He gets it almost up on the road, and the hook comes loose. This time it went down, bashed into a tree, and broke the radiator. He goes down, hooks on it again, gets it right up to the top, and it breaks loose again. Okay, and it hit the side. The third time it got loose, it went end over end to the bottom of the canyon, was totaled. We had a fire truck stuck up there. We're doing a thing, and Johnny showed up, and all of us said, "Johnny, we'll run the record. We'll get it. Let us run the record." And he did. We got it out. But man, yeah, interesting character.
Yeah, he was. We learned pretty early on not to call him once. He was absolute last resort. It had to be at their request. We certainly didn't.
Your new recruit, always called, as nice as you are?
Is my clerk?
No. Recruit, your recruit.
I hope so. I hope we hire the best. We certainly work hard trying to hire the best.
How many women do you have?
Yeah. I was going to ask you.
We have two clerks. We don't have any female officers currently. Now, we have had female officers in the past. We've had, in fact, Cindy Osborne was one. She's now with the county. She's with the Sheriff's Department. And she's homegrown, raised around here, Cindy Osborne. Folks know her, and she's still active with them. We had another one several years ago. I don't know if you remember her.
Tiny little gal.
I don't even remember her name now. It's been so long.
But Judith Chapman misses you guys.
Yeah, she was a clerk.
She's got a real sick cousin. He's bedridden now.
So
she's my neighbor. None currently. That's not because they're not desired. It's just, you know, we process the applicants as they come through, and we just don't get a large draw for it.
Yeah, she's my neighbor.
That one little gal we had there for a few years, she was only about a year. We worked with her pretty long, pretty hard, because she was so small in stature. We were concerned about, you know, her taking on the big bruisers that can kind of tend to hang around the tavern kind of thing. So we spent a lot of time in training with her. And finally, after we got her through everything with all our challenges, we finally got to a comfort level of cutting her loose on her own. And she said, "Well, now that I've proven to myself I can do it," she says, "I'm going to go back to teaching." So she went back to become a teacher, so we lost her. Again, a lot of history, a lot of stories. I don't know if any of you remember the call down on Main Street. This is again years ago, where the guy comes off the bridge on a motorcycle and collides into the fire hydrant, smacks into the wall, and the big ball of flame shoots in the air, and he catches on fire. I was with Gene Sanders that night. Gene was new at the time. He was in training. And so we go over and we grab this guy, and we drag him off his motorcycle. He's on fire, so I take my brand new police coat that I just got. It was like $350 for this darn thing. Smothered him out, got the flames out, and all of a sudden we hear this bang, bang, and I don't know, what the heck is that? And so we drag him up around the corner, and we're laying over the top of him because we've got the bulletproof vests on. And he's lying there, he's breathing, but he's not very coherent. And I look at Gene and say, "What the heck was that?" He goes, "I'm not sure, it sounded like gunfire." And pretty soon, bang, bang again. So we finally surmise that, you know, the gunshots are coming from the motorcycle. So we ask him, "Did you have a gun on that motorcycle?" He goes, "Yeah, I did." And so that's what's going on, is the gun, the rounds are firing from the fire. Well, about that time, the fire truck Mike Marty Sr. was on duty that night. I don't remember who his partner was, but they come up in one of those old fire trucks, just come barreling down the street, and I'm trying to get them on the radio, you know, tell these guys, don't come any closer, the gunshots are going off, you know. Anyway, they come racing up to it, and they skid, and they come to a stop, and they see the big ball of fire, and they jump out. I'm trying to yell at him, "Get back in your truck." And he's, "What?" And all of a sudden, bang, bang, another round goes off. And he jumped back in that fire truck so fast, I've never seen a fire truck go backwards. The other funny thing was, when the bike initially hit and was on fire, we had, of course, the whole crowd from the Duval Tavern come out, you know, and they see this, and they're yelling, "Save the bike, save the bike!" You know? Well, until they hear the gunshots. And as soon as they hear the gunshots, all I saw elbows and back in the tavern, they went. They didn't come back down again. They never heard from that guy again. I assume he lived. We never heard anything more about him. You know, they transported him. I assume he was okay. But anyway, a lot of funny, bizarre things. I've always, I had plenty of stories to share with my colleagues over the years about all the funny things we've had go on out here. And of course, you know, we've all got our war stories, but I tell you, I've got some that I just absolutely cherish over the years. You know, memories that I wouldn't trade for anything. A couple highlights. I know you guys are more than aware of the big park sweep we had about 8 years ago. We went through town. What a lot of people don't know about that, and I feel a little more comfortable talking about it now because so many years have passed, that was actually almost a year-long investigation that took most of the members of the police department to actually conduct that investigation. And a couple things that make it difficult in smaller cities, of course, we know everybody is very tight-knit. By the same token, you've got to be very careful about the information that you have, because all it takes is one little rumor, and the gig's up, you know, the bad guys know you're after them kind of thing. Anyway, I was very proud of the guys at the time in the organization, because, you know, it was a year-long investigation. It was a lot of work. We had targeted roughly 25 individuals that were involved in the drug activity at the time, and that's just within our area. And when we did those drug sweeps, we did them all in one day. We targeted all these different houses and went in at once. Like, I've got to be honest with you, our largest concern was that, you know, this is going to tip our community upside down. We knew that there'd be bad media press, and of course, you know, and sure enough, the media trucks were just, you know, bombarding us. But I tell you, our community really pulled together, and I was pretty proud of them as well, because we could obviously forewarn you folks that, you know, these are the things that are going to happen here shortly. Be ready, be prepared. We just had to do our job and try to live with the aftermath. But the community really stood behind us, stood behind investigations. Of course, there were a lot of innuendos and comments being made about, you know, the cops are crooked, that's, you know, they're just, you know, all that kind of thing. Of course, the courts did their job. They found guilty pleas on all these guys. They all, in fact, several of them went to jail. What I can tell you is that the cases didn't stop with just us. Those cases roll over into more cases. And they rolled into, I don't know how many more, 50 to 100 more cases outside of our jurisdiction. Once they left the Duval area, we basically stopped and didn't go any further with it. But I can tell you that effort that we applied back then, as hard as it was for us, the officers involved, the community itself, it really served us well. To this day, we don't have those kinds of major drug problems in our community. Of course, we have little issues here or there, but nothing to the magnitude that we had back then. So I think the reputation, it was time that we sent that message loud and clear that this community has a zero tolerance for that sort of behavior. And it still lives today. And even the people that were involved back then, enough years have gone by where, I know Mr. Coates was just approached here. He told me 2 months ago that one of the guys that was arrested involved in that case came up to him and said, you know, he said, I didn't appreciate it at the time, but I certainly appreciate it now. You probably saved my life. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 8 or 9 years goes by, and you know, even they can learn to forgive and forget a little bit.
You even had a council member on that one, didn't you?
That's one of the ones I'm talking about. Now, unfortunately, that was one of the black guys that we suffered. But you know, the ironic thing about that is that year was, of course, all the media coverage about that big case and all those things that we're doing. That was also the same year that we kicked off our DARE program. The DARE program is for the kids in the school. Not a single media truck, not a single press coverage other than our own little local paper about how proud we were of starting that DARE program. I remember saying that to the parents in the graduation on that day, that, you know, for all the things we've been through this last year, you know, trying to do what we can to either be proactive or, you know, reactive to drug cases. You know, this is actually the proud moment, teaching the kids, you know, to stay away from this stuff. But again, we didn't get much media coverage, but it was a proud moment for us, quite honestly. Of course, we've all shared and experienced all the bad weather events. I've been through so many of them anymore, I can't even keep track of them all. You know, I proudly share this with people when I go traveling and to classes and that sort of thing. But boy, what a hearty community we have out here. All the tragedy that we've had and the major events, you know, the windstorms, the flooding, the wind, you know, the snow, we managed to always get through it. And I really think that speaks to the fortitude that we have. So when they talk about emergency management and community policing and all these terms that they apply to the way people are supposed to respond to things, I tell them, I said, you can call it or label it what you want, but I'll tell you, if you want a prime example of how things are done, you need to go look at how Duval does it, because they've learned how to survive.
Putting in good food at the church.
Yeah. I've always told my wife, I said, you know, emergency events, you know, not that they're good, but I'll tell you, you know, the one thing I look forward to is I can go to any house and get a free meal, a bed to sleep in, I don't have to worry about my laundry, and I know my patrol car's safe. So, you know, it just doesn't get any better than that. But anyway, hours and hours of stories that I can share with you, events that have occurred out here over the years. But, you know, for people like me who have chosen to not only get into this career field, but made a conscious choice to do it for the community of Duval, yes, opportunity's been there to go other places, but I've always said the same thing. If I wasn't doing it here, probably wouldn't be doing it at all. And I can tell you that same opinion rests with many of my officers, quite honestly. And I think that's why many of them made a conscious decision to commit to a community like this and do a career field. Not only am I your first official police chief, but I'm your first official police officer that's ever graduated the academy that's decided to stay. So I'm trying to set several patterns here. One is that you can graduate the academy, get a job in Duval, keep your job in Duval, and retire from Duval. And I'm just about there. So all the guys coming up next behind me, that should be an easy expectation. So Anyway, that's all I have unless, any of you have any stories you want to share with me or remind me of some stories that I can highlight for you.
You just mentioned briefly about Carnation, mm-hmm. and up until the time Duval Police took over Carnation, they were with the county. Okay. And I know my friends in Carnation are very glad now that they have Duval. So how do you work at that? How is your presence down there and here both?
They contract with work coverage that consists of 3.5 police officers. That 0.5 represents the administrative coverage. Mm-hmm. So they, in essence, pay for 3 full-time officer salaries. Mm-hmm. But we work a very unique shift out here. The guys work 12 hours on, 12 hours off, mm-hmm. 4 on, 4 off. So by that virtue of that schedule, we can provide almost 24-hour coverage for them for that 3 officer allotment of, the salary that they pay.
Do you always have an officer down there?
Most of the time, there are gaps. We don't advertise what those gaps are, obviously, because we don't want the bad guys to catch on to it. And we change it up periodically just to keep the bad guys guessing. What's kind of funny about that is that when we walked in and the county left, by the way, the reception wasn't very warm by the county when we got down there. I'll just be honest with you and tell you that. So we didn't have much to start with. We kind of started from scratch and just rebuilt the whole program. But the bad guys, they were funny. They were actually very funny. You know, we had heard about all the burglaries and the car prowling and all those things going on down there. So what we decided to do is to spend the first couple of weeks not only with one MARC unit, but we'd spend time in civilian clothes and civilian vehicles. And I remember it was right around Christmas or just before Christmas, Gene and I were taking turns. In fact, we were both working that night, and we had our own cars and our own civilian clothes, and we're out there, you know, just prowling around looking for bad guys. And Gene gets in a hurry, and he goes, tells me where he is, and he goes, get over here quick, I've got somebody on foot running. Oh, okay, so I'm running too, and we're trying to catch on, we're down Commercial Street or something. Here's Gene, he's got this kid accosted, he's got this Christmas tree under his arm. And we're like, what the heck are you doing? And apparently he walked over the tree farm, hacks out one of the trees, and was going to run home with his free Christmas tree at 2 in the morning. And the first thing he says, because you guys can't do that. Do what? Well, that's not fair. You got to have uniforms and police cars. Welcome to the Duval way. We don't do things like anybody else does. And so it took us a good 6 months to really get a handle on the things down there. The bad guys, they were used to, they see a car drive through, they knew they were okay to do crime for a while. Well, we had to break up that routine for them. It took us about 6 months, and the courts start seeing more and more of these people coming back and start giving jail time out. We took the crime rate from, initially, when we got down there, it was like 35, 36 crimes per every 1,000 citizens. We took that down to 6.8 the first year we were there. And then last year came in at 5.6 per thousand. So that's the impact that we've got in the actual crime rate. So we're actually very proud. You know, for years, we all had to learn to live with the politics that have existed between the two cities. First of all, I'm not a politician. Don't care to be a politician. I just want to do my job. And so in trying to get these two cities working together, I tell you, it was like bashing your head against the wall at times, you know, trying to get them to agree to anything and work together. To me, it's a simple concept, but again, I'm not a politician, and I don't understand all the things that get involved or in the middle of it. But anyway, one of the things we've been able to do by the contract services with Carnation is we've been able to show them that working together does work. It can save you money, and you can have a good product or a good outcome in the end. And now we find that the council members are working together, they're collaborating more, they're doing things like sharing public works employees. Our building inspector now does things for both cities. Mm-hmm. They share equipment constantly. We're talking about mutually applying for grants together. Not only are we doing that with Carnation, now we're getting some Snoqualmie more involved with our communities as well. So we're really turning this thing back to what it originally should be, and that's the Snoqualmie Valley citizens, not just Duval, not just Carnation. And the bad guys get to know that too. So the bad guys know, you drive around these two cities out here, because the chances are you're going to get pulled over for your burned out taillight. Chances are the drug dog is going to show up and sniff your car, and if you get drugs, you're going to jail. So we're getting the bad guys to learn that too. So we're all winners. We're all winners.
And
we're
how does Falls City fit into that, or does it yet?
It does not fit into our scheme at all. It's on under county, and I don't even think it's an official township. So it all falls under the auspices of county until they decide to incorporate, and then they can make their own decisions. But you know, that's a long road ahead for them.
Well, you work so much different than the sheriff does anyway. I don't think you would work with them.
We do have completely different programs, but for some good reasons, though. I mean, they have some good troops, but their policies, their philosophies, their logic, all those things are different than ours. We are very much formulated to be unique, to meet the needs of the citizens here. That's our first priority. County doesn't have those same priorities. They don't have the same policies to back that up. We work together when we're on Scenica. We just don't see a whole lot of them, quite honestly. So we've got quite used to being the only ones out here for years. It's always been that way for us. I remember back in my early days, I'd respond off as far away as Woodville to back them up on a call. Of course, we don't do that anymore. I mean, we got so many calls in our own city that, you know, we can't even hardly get out the door without a call coming in. But we do work well together. But, you know, we have coverage now that provides, you know, good security for our two communities. We run no fewer than three officers around the clock. So there's always police officers on duty to respond. And the other thing, too, that we did is we pulled our communications dispatch from King County, from, you know, the courthouse in Seattle down to over to the city of Redmond. Nice thing about that, we've had a great relationship with Redmond. They're kind of like our big brothers, if you will. And they very much care about the community and the citizens out here. Every 911 call that goes through the system, if it's a medical call, for example, they'll stay on the line, they'll tell us, and we go too with fire. So we go on more medical calls, well, as many as the fire department does now. And that's an neat thing for us, is because a lot of times we're already there, close to being there. And a lot of times we can meet the fire department there. So, again, the community is getting a much, much better service.
Yeah, that's good. Because it used to be in the fire department, when we switched to the dispatch from King County, we would have an auto accident out here someplace, and they would send the King County officer to the accident scene, then they would dispatch fire. And there were issues with that. I found one on Cherry Valley Road where we needed an aid car, and luckily I had a fire radio, and I called the dispatch and said, how come you haven't dispatched fire? And they said, well, we're waiting for the King County police officer to get on site, and he was in Woodinville.
That could be 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Typical call.
We need an aid car now to dispatch Duval, which they did. And then I talked to Mercer, and I said, we got a problem. Somebody's going to die.
Well, I'm sure most of you remember Bud Backer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
He came into town. He came into town about a year after I did.
Yeah.
And we were both single guys at the time, and we actually shared an apartment together for a couple of years. And so, you know, we were the, I don't know, there were a bunch of nicknames for us. But anyway, we were roomed up together. And, you know, I used to bring a police car home, and he'd take the command rig home. And it was kind of funny, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning, the phone would ring. Of course, we know it's dispatch. You want a fireman or you want a cop? And a lot of times it was both. And I remember responding many times with Bud to an A call because, you know, the backup for those guys, calling those guys up. And I would chase him in my police car in his ambulance, and it would be he and I blowing the people up in the gurney in the back of the aid car. Mm-hmm. And there were a few times where he went in his ambulance, followed me to some of my calls. So, you know, we really buddied up back then. But that was back when, you know, there were only a couple of us around. But dispatchers just get a big kick out of that. But, yeah, we've come a long way since then. And you know, you folks see the growth like I do, and you know, it is a growing community. The one thing that I should make sure is very, very clear, very hard at this every day that I work, is that you know, hanging on to community is not an easy chore. It's a lot of work. One of the things I did early on in my career is I used to go up and help Monroe. Whenever Monroe go on a retreat, they take all their troops away for a couple days, and I go and I cover their city for them. Boy, what a new town I thought that was. You know, they were like 4,500 back then in population. We were about 1,000. And I thought, this is what Duval's going to be someday. You know, a town of 5,000 people and tight-knit community. My honest opinion, I think Monroe's lost a lot of that over the years. They've got so big. And, you know, there may be some close ties and things up there, but nowhere near to what we have here in Duval. So one of the things we work hard and try to focus on is put the effort into keeping the community here. It'd be really heartbreaking to see us get to about 9,000 people and lose that. So we work very hard at that. Of course, you know, when we hire our officers, we screen very heavy for that as well. In fact, we've got a brand new lieutenant that I'm hiring. He'll be with us here in about 2 weeks. And I hired him. He's a detective sergeant from Bothell. And he's been there about 15 years. The reason he's coming to us is he specifically wants to work for a community that has these ideals, that still has that attachment and pride to its community. So he's walking away from a 15-year career in Bothell as a sergeant detective, going to work for us as a lieutenant, just so he can be a part of a community and a program like we have. So again, there's an investment by not only the council and the mayor to provide the funding to support these positions, but of course that's what we see. And we're actually getting people that want to be a part of programs in communities like this. So we're doing some really good, terrific things. But again, it's worth to hang on to, but good work. Good work.
So did he grow up in Bothell?
Well, you know, I believe it was in that area, but you know, there's more people that I'm running to out here that have heard that we're hiring him. In fact, somebody just mentioned it yesterday. Hey, we hear you're hiring so-and-so. I said, yeah. Well, you know, we got to know him over in Bothell, and we really hate to see him go, but it's really good that you're getting him here in Duval, though. So, you know, we're hearing
that. But I just wondered, because there are three or four people over there that I had as students that are police officer.
Jeffrey Aspott. Tall, slender guy.
Tall, slender, soft-spoken.
Very soft-spoken.
Yeah.
Awesome individual. Very good guy. Very family.
I'll have to be good now.
Of course, his chief and assistant chief are going to do the background, and they tell us, well, you know, you're wasting your time here. We think you just ought to rip up your background packet and walk out and just forget the guy. They don't want to see him go.
Yeah.
Are you writing a book and keeping track of all these?
You know, I am not very good at that, but I'm also in the process of hiring another assistant clerk to help my Shelley up that we've had for the last few years. And one of the projects that she'll have is to work on our archives, because I'm not very good at that. And it's not that I don't care about it, just I'm not organized enough. So that's one of the duties she's going to have is to actually pull that together. And Alana knows that supports us. In fact, when Alana's with us, you were our morale officer, I think, at the time, weren't you? Weren't you in charge of morale for a while? Planning, helping?
Oh, birthdays and whatnot,
We do try to, because I can't do that. I'm just not organized to do that kind of stuff. But we're hoping that this new gal coming in, Therese Bromberg, have any of you met Therese Bromberg? She's very active in the CERT program currently, and she's been managing the Kohani Homeowners Association for the last several years. To the point where she just cannot deal with them up there with them anymore. Apparently she resigned, and of course our opening came up, so she applied with us. Very involved with the community. In fact, she lives in Carnation. Anyway, she's our candidate, and she's going through her background as we speak, and hopefully she'll be on board in the next couple of weeks. But that'll be one of her assigned tasks, to help us get our archive system together. There's a lot of history. We don't want to lose.
That's true. You've given us a very good talk tonight. It should all be kept in.
Well, we have pictures, like the elephant races down Main Street. I don't know if you heard.
We were looking for the elephant race.
We were. Yes, we were hoping to find pictures.
Well, actually, who was it that dug those out? Lisa Allen found them in the Woodville Weekly Archives. They kind of got the story wrong at the council meeting, but that's okay. It started off as a little carnival that was coming through town, and Bud Backer and I raced. Most folks thought it was John Lambert, but actually Bud and I that raced, and then Jim Bursaw and... I think it was Mercer Timmel. Mercer Timmel and him, Jim Bursaw raced. Well, Jim lost to Mercer, but I did beat Buck. So
did you actually race elephants?
Yes. Elephants.
They came over your place.
Then they were down.
Well, they had seals down there.
That came up because one of the council members a few months ago. We were talking about something, and he referenced, he says, you know, that'll happen the day elephants run down Main Street. We've had that happen before. And he looked at me funny, like, what the heck are you talking about? So we went on this mission to find the news article, and we show those. And now there's cartoon sketchings floating around town with us on the elephants. We have fun.
Well, we do appreciate you. Thank you for telling us all these lovely stories and for assembling the history. Thank you very, very much.
Well, it's all history with you. So.
That's true.
I think one of the remarkable things is that you stated how it started in '84, but really there was a couple of pretty good stories with how it got started. Because, I think Shorty was a little town clown before, and I don't know if you knew Shorty or not.
I did not, but I heard about him.
He was quite a little character, but he was a good little guy.
You bet he was.
When they first started the formal police department, when that was Dave Terrence, and he was driving his own car, I think it was the police car, and that says, all little towns go. But usually at one point or another, there gets to be an upheaval for one reason or another, because the guy, he's really not a police chief, he's the town clown, and you were here at when that upheaval was, and we haven't had an upheaval since.
Hope not.
Well, yeah, and so you read a lot of the other smaller town newspapers in other counties, and it's not uncommon that periodically the little police departments in towns, for their 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 population, that every 3 or 4 years there's nearly an implosion or an explosion, however you want to look at it, between the police department and whatever they've, for various things or infractions that they've been involved in. Yeah. And since you and Bursaw have been involved here, there haven't been any, and hopefully you won't have any.
To your credit, that hasn't happened. A couple things I've had very fortunate in my life is my stepfather, who raised me since I was a young lad, his mother, Libby Grant, who lived lived just right at the intersection of Lake Wingless and Highway 203, had the flower garden. Anyway, raised by my stepfather for years, who was actually a mayor for Gold Bar for quite a few years, told me then, he said, you know, if you really get in the spiritual, you probably don't want to do it in a small town because the politics usually catch up with the guys at some point in time. It's really hard to get careers. I said, well, but you know, rules are meant to be broken. I mean, if a guy gets in there and does the right kind of job, he should be okay. Well, I've had those challenges quite honestly over the years. We've had to have, you know, dealings with mayor's kids or cousins or siblings or whatever the case is. And I can honestly tell you that the sense of pride that we have here is the integrity level has stood tall every time. If we have ever had to give up that piece, that integrity, none of the successes we've had would be here now. And Mr. Gross was here, he'd attest to this as well. We have had occasions where we've had to deal with family members. And it's a difficult thing. Jean Baldwin was here when she was here. I arrested her son 3 or 4 times at least during my career. I remember the first time, I didn't know Gene very well. I arrested him for crashing into the Duval Bridge, getting his bumper stuck, spinning his tires trying to go, and I'm coming out of the Alice's doing bar checks. I'm like, what the heck is that guy doing hung up on the bridge? I go down there, and it's her son. So I arrest him, take him to Redmond. I call Gene on the phone. I said, Gene, I've got some really bad news. I arrested your son for DUI, and I need you to come pick him up. She goes, okay. And so she comes down. Again, I don't know her very well. And I pull her aside and I said, you know, I don't know if this is something that, you know, as I've been warned, it's going to cost me my career now, but I've got to do my job. She goes, I would expect nothing less and expect you to treat everybody exactly the same.
Good.
So that was the pattern. That was the history we established here with our integrity. And it's been challenged over the years, but I tell you, we stood tall to it ever since, every time. And that's what allows us to do our job. Mm-hmm. That's the difference between, I think, the issues that cause controversy in other cities is, you get the politics mixed up in it, and you guys sacrifice doing the right thing. Sacrifice that integrity. That's what costs. That's what
I know. In the fire department, we were really happy when we finally got a police department, because we get domestic violence calls, and we go out there, you know, and no backup or anything, and King County miles away, and it's really nice to have a police department where, you know, when you got that kind of situation, which is for, you know, really not secure, that you have somebody right there pretty quick to deal with it.
Or you get some corruption in the department itself. You know, some of the guys in it aren't quite as good as they might be.
We don't have any issues like that because we have no tolerance for issues. Mm-hmm. Like one of those. We're all about business. And we just have no tolerance for that whatsoever. Fortunately, our guys are a bunch of guys that get into mischief like that anyway. But I'll tell you, if we have, it'd be gone on our beat. And we have let a few people go over the years, but usually it's because of lack of competence or training issues or those kinds of things. But here's another little tradition I think is interesting. Is our first police chief, when he went through the academy, he had failed 2 tests. And if he had failed the third, he would have been kicked out of the academy. So when I went through it, I was determined to try and regain that reputation through the academy that we in Duval can pass tests. I passed every one of my tests. I never failed a single one. So to this day, when I get these new recruits in, I sit down with each of them before they go to the academy, and I tell them, since that first chief went through, we have not yet had a single officer in all these years fail a single test, and don't you let us down. And we have not had a single officer, after all these years, fail a single test going through those academies. Mm-hmm. So,
do you give tours?
For a facility?
Do you give tours down to the police?
Absolutely. No schedule required. You can show up and ask.
Showing the holding cells.
That's where the kids all were going. Holding cells and the police cars.
How's the casino there, Glenn?
The
casino. The food.
The food? The cuisine?
Yeah.
Well, we don't serve watches in our facility because we don't hold them there. They get that on. We usually haul them off to Issaquah or King County. No, we don't feed them.
When they opened the new police department, we went through the tour, and the food was pretty good.
Yeah, well, if you go in the break room, you go in the break room, the guys get fed pretty well.
We feel pretty safe now. We're right behind Starbucks, and there's usually 3 or 4 police cars back right up to my garden. We just feel real safe.
Absolutely. They got to get their coffee breaks, too.
And CC's, they got to get their ice cream and coffee.
Well, you know, when Safeway was first built, the Safeway, the folks that built that, we're so happy to have us around that they stuck a couple signs out saying police cars.
Yeah.
We didn't ask those, and somebody called and complained to me about those, and I'm thinking, what the heck are you talking about? I don't know anything about any signs down at Safeway. So I got to look at them, sure enough, there's a couple of these. So I called Safeway and said, you got to take those things down. I'm getting people calling and complaining that we're getting special privilege. And he said, I flat refuse to take those down. You guys deserve that. I'm leaving them up. I said, you don't understand. it may be a good intention, but it's causing me a lot of grief. He says, I don't care. He says, I believe in the mob. Well, they've gotten been vandalized over time, so they've kind of disappeared now, and new management there as well. And I had to tell my guys, don't park in those stalls because, you know, I get phone calls.
That's true.
Yeah.
The manager, he wanted you down there.
Absolutely. Yeah,
because that was the end of town, and you know, that was the end of town, and he figured let you work in that end of town, too.
You know, what people don't realize is they'll see the police cars there, I think, always that we're there for the Starbucks. Quite honestly, we get a lot of our calls there. Everything from shoplifts to fraud, every check, bad check that goes through there. Not many agencies still investigate bad checks. We do. It's every bad check, every check fraud, every prescription fraud, internal investigations with, you know, all those things we get. So our guys are down there, and go figure, it's the biggest commercial business that we have in town, and so our guys do spend time down there. Yes, they go in and drink the coffee. But they're down there all the time anyway, so,
More power to them. They better be careful, because I might not invite them in for coffee.
There you go.
We have the known to do that.
Well, thank you
very much. Thank you.
He should put his stories together so we could publish his book, too.
Well, you know, we really would if there's any sort of written format, or if you'd like some assistance in kind of writing down some of those stories. We would like to, at some point.
And if you need a few more of them, I can help you.
Well, I've got 15 more here that I can't
go over. Maybe if he were to put something together.
If you put it together, we'd like to publish it as part of our wagon wheels, if you would, Glenn.
Because, you know, to publish a book on your own, sometimes it gets to be it can be a difficult process. I mean, you can put it together, but then, you know, to get it published and the whole bit there, and a lot of people have the information, but the books don't get published.
And the where history been of the police department would be good in a wagon wheel book.
It certainly would, so thank you very much.
So take that in mind.
Reading material.
Remember that big
wedge
we had here a few months ago? Driving down Big Rock Road and watching the trees go on the wall, sitting bang in the side of my car. What the heck is that? A shopping cart come flying out of Safeway, dashed in the side of my car. I'm doing like 10, 20 miles an hour down Big Rock. The thing slams into my car. That's not bad enough. A few minutes later, going up around, I think it was around Ridge Creek somewhere, somebody's boogie board took sale, bounced off the windshield. And as I'm getting on the radio to tell my guys, hey, find some cover quick, another guy gets in there and says, he says, I'm headed for the cow shop. He says, I just got slapped upside the car door with a garage door.
Oh, no.
I have
13 trees still on my property that went down.
Yeah, it's just...
But nobody to cut them up. My son's over hunting now.
But I'll tell you, my guys, that night, I've never been so proud of them, because we were having trees falling into houses, and it got so bad where, you know, we were tagging with the fire department to get to those calls. I actually had one of the public works guys with his chainsaw in my car. We'd go into the call, and he'd have to chainsaw the tree all the way to get us through. We'd go to the call, we'd have to chainsaw our way back out again. And meanwhile, the trees are literally falling in front and behind us. And my guys, you know, even though I told them to stay at the station house, stay until your call comes in, because I don't want you to get slapped by the car, they were out there anyway, responding on every call. And we were flooded with calls, obviously, all night long. Total disregard for their own safety, completely responding to the needs out there, just amazing.
Come in to tour, we need somebody here, and then somebody upstairs because there's so many people that one person can't go up and down and keep up with the people. So I'm hoping that, and so we have upstairs in the afternoon and downstairs morning or afternoon.
I already told Tony we'll be here all weekend. I'm down on the Friday.
Yeah. And then, I don't know if you, did you see these posters that the Duval, here, I'll send this poster around.
Connie, we need a pair.
Here you go. Babe, can you hand that to Bill?
Connie, what are we gonna do about pouring the pores?
Is there a website that tells about this? Yes, there is, okay.
All right, that's another thing, yes. Do we have, do we have all the people we need to have sign up?
No, that's what I was saying. I was looking at that, and we just had one person for half a day upstairs.